Talk Shoe. Recorded live.
Hello, folks. It is June 15th, Wednesday night at midnight on the East Coast. And it's our 15th episode on the 15th of June. So it's 15 on the 15th. Our special guest this evening will be Clint Richardson from We Are Change Utah. He's also the director of a film called The Corporation Nation. He was on our show last month, and we had a great conversation, but unfortunately, 2 hours was not enough. He will be joining us in just a moment. First, I'm going to set the mood for you guys, as usual, with a little bit of music.
You are unmuted.
All right, people, we're back, and before we bring on our guest of the evening, Clint Richardson, I just want to make the announcement that we are going to be having a time change starting July 14th. We will be moving to Thursdays at 11 p.m., as we will not only be on Talk Shoe, but we will be simulcasted on livefree.fm. So that's very exciting news. Also, we have our website is finally up and running. The main website is, of course, the King for Mayor, where you can find out all about my political activity. That is the King, the number 4, mayor.com. And you can also type in ilibertarian.thekingformayor.com to go straight to the iLibertarian website. And please welcome our guest, Clint Richardson. How are you doing tonight? Oh. There you go. Should be unmuted now. Clint Richardson, how are you doing tonight?
Let's try again. I'm well, thank you very much. Now that I'm unmuted, I feel good.
Yes, it's always nice to have your voice heard, isn't it?
Yeah, no one puts baby in a corner.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems almost every time that I really get something going here, something happens. My mic cuts out. The internet goes out. I was talking to a Florida sheriff last week who is actually trying to promote legislation to overturn Real ID, which is really amazing that we seem to be having something going on in our country today. There seems to be this kind of split amongst our law enforcement. We seem to they seem to be polarizing into either gung-ho libertarian ideas and fighting for freedom and constitutionality, or they seem to be signing up to be part of basically the Gestapo. What do you think about that?
Well, I'm in the middle of that battle right here in the good old Salt Lake County. We've got our sheriff. This is a long story, but basically the nuts and bolts of it are that our sheriff, our county sheriff, the elected law person in the county, sold out. He assigned his sheriff's deputy, his sheriff's department, over to a private corporate structure known as a special district. And that's called the Unified Police District. And so when you talk to the former deputies, they say that they are no longer sheriff's deputies. It's been their dream to be in the sheriff's department and not the municipal corporate police department. And now they are nothing more than police officers in the Unified Police Department. So we have still got an elected sheriff. But that elected sheriff was appointed CEO of this corporation that was this entity that was instilled within the county. And basically what we have here is a multi-jurisdictional task force where all the police now have jurisdiction. And since I've started releasing this, I'm finding that, like, for instance, one fellow in L.A. said that his police actually have jurisdiction in Arizona, Nevada, and one other state that I don't remember what it was. But we've now got basically a federalized police force. There are very few sheriffs who are actually fighting against this. And what it really boils down to is Agenda 21 districting, where each little slice of government is being put into these types of districts. So.
Yeah, we seem to have a big problem with borders and jurisdiction. Seems to have been pretty much thrown out the window. I keep seeing all these we have all these exchange programs going on with our military being trained for exercises in the United States and elsewhere. Our military is going overseas to work against the population of other countries, and likewise, other countries' military is coming here to deal with these quote-unquote terrorist situations.
Yeah, and then there's a lot of that type of stuff happening. I like to say, and this, you know, it's not really a racist comment. It's just with the DREAM Act, which is a bill that's been in Congress for the last couple of years. I don't think it's been passed yet, but it's very possible. And California even has a separate California DREAM Act. Basically says that if you serve you're anyone in any country, you can serve in the United States military for a couple of years and gain your citizenship. So I like to say that, while this country is mostly white, let's face it, it's a majority white, or will be for a while anyway. Those are the people that are going over and hurting and maiming and raping and killing families over in the brown people over in the Arab countries, and now the United States is inviting the brown people, the Arab, of Arab descent, over here and the Chinese to become our military, and pretty soon we're going to be guarded by, the brown people. That's it's not a racial slur in any way. It's just what's happening. But when you have a military or a military police or a police force that is made up primarily of people from other countries. Well, of course, the reason that our soldiers are over there killing innocent people, women and children, is because they don't have the empathy that they would have if they were over here. Likewise, the people over there that come over here and simply join the military to gain citizenship in America are not going to have the empathy for American people. So naturally, they're going to be the ones that are going to be assigned to this future police state that we're apparently coming into. So it's a tough thing to look at.
It seems they want to hand the power off to the people who have no interest in protecting the American people. it seems to be the general theme going on.
Well, and again, we're talking about multi-jurisdiction. This is the most important thing. They call it here unified, but really what it boils down to is that a long time ago, over 15, it's been happening for 30 years, really, but for the last 15 years, they've been planning this merger of police. And what it does is gives multi-jurisdiction, mostly, you know, within the state, but as I said, it's also interstate, and that is federalization. So we have to understand what jurisdiction means, okay? And you can take the word juris and split it into its two parts, juris and diction. But the definition of jurisdiction in a lawful sense, a dictionary sense, it's actually quite frightening when you consider what's happening. It's defined as the power, the right, or the authority. So power, right, and authority to interpret and apply the law. All right, so, you know, traditionally, who interprets law but a judge, a constitutional-based judge, you know, which we don't have anymore. We have lawyers, attorneys masking around, masquerading as judges at this point. But if you think about it, you know, when I look at my police department, I see that all it takes to become a police officer, and I can't say sheriff's deputy anymore because we don't have those, but to become a police officer, municipal police officer, all I have to have is a high school education, and I have to take about a 20-hour course to complete the police training, all right? Now, you got to ask yourself, when we're talking about jurisdiction, and jurisdiction having the definition that simply states the power, right, and authority to interpret and apply the law, are you going to want a high school educated person to do that, knowing that our high school and education system has been purposefully dumbed down for the last 70 years? So we have a real problem when you look at it this way, and you think of what jurisdiction actually means and who these police officers actually are. It's quite frightening, really.
So getting back to your friend the sheriff again, well, not your friend, but your local sheriff / police CEO, I was listening to your interview with him on your blog, realityblogger.com. Is that correct? Realityblogger.com?
.wordpress.com, yeah.
Oh, .wordpress.com. It was a pretty heated discussion you were having with him there. Now, you say he sold out, basically, the people or the sheriff's department. When you say that, it was, are you saying that it was ultimately his decision? And if it was, then what did he have to gain from that? What was it that he got paid for in selling out?
Well, there's several quotes by this gentleman, and he, you know, his father was a federal judge. His family is the local dairy tycoon, so it's a wealthy family, a wealthy elitist family. And if you know anything about the Salt Lake area, it's a Mormon elitist, which makes it even more frightening, because it basically boils down to masonry, which is what the church really is a Masonic kind of cult, if you will. Basically. A sheriff is there. A sheriff is an elected official. He does not really have to answer to another body. In fact, he is the person that can make an arrest on a council that would actually want to do what they've done in this area. So he's the last vestige of hope, you might say. He's the last person that can say no to the federal government and its encroachments. He is literally the law of the land. So if you have a problem with your municipal police, you know, you call the sheriff. And the sheriff comes out and he saves the day. That's the way it's supposed to be. You know, your typical Andy Griffith type of model where the sheriff does those sorts of things. They used to be there to protect and serve, but, you know, there's laws now that say that they have no requirement to protect and serve anymore. So basically what it was his decision to go along with, and it turns out that he was planning this for 15 years, and I have quotes that indicate that, where he quoted it in the actual mayor's report. But basically the county council got together with the county mayor and created this this unified police district, basically, department. And I'm hearing a little bit of an echo there. I don't know. That's kind of weird.
Let me see if I can fix that for you.
I'm actually listening to myself thinking, hey. So the county, basically the whole county council, the mayors of each individual cities, the county mayor, the county sheriff, even some of the individual sheriffs of the municipalities are all in on this, and it's a cooperative effort. And again, the sheriff's deputies have been, everything's been relegated over to this. You know, you ask yourself, well, it would make sense. Okay, I don't mind giving the sheriff's department more power. That's fine. But see, what's happened in that stead was that all of the sheriff's powers were granted to a new county-supervised district, where, yes, the sheriff is CEO of the corporation, while still acting somehow as elected sheriff. He is now appointed CEO, chief executive officer of this district, this entity of government. But he answers now, instead of having that autonomy, that lawful autonomy and constitutional, hopefully constitutional autonomy, he now answers to this council of the three city council or county council members and the mayor. I mean, this is treason. And basically what it boils down to, again, is the federalization of all police. This is happening everywhere. And this is what I've come to find out since I've been doing this. It all boils back down to Agenda 21. What we're finding is that, you know, when you think of something called a district, and this is what these are, they're special financing districts, special service area districts, which is what this is. What we're finding is that basically if you divide government up into its individual functions, say, you know, your water, your sewer, your police, your fire. And by the way, we also have a unified fire department here. And I'll explain why this is so important when I read a particular story about another unified police department in Tennessee, I believe. But the crazy thing, the crazy thing about this, well, in fact, you know what? I'm gonna bring this up, this story, because I think this will hit it home for you in a way that I don't think anything else really can. So let me just bring this story up here. Oh. Naturally, my computer's not going to cooperate now. Okay. So just so you understand what's happened here, we basically they created this special district, which now is in control of the police services in all of the unincorporated county, which is the unincorporated cities, essentially, and then some of the cities who've decided to join. And of course, the sheriff is out there. He wears a really fancy suit, and he's out essentially pimping, selling this sheriff's, this unified police department district to these other cities. So eventually the whole of Salt Lake County is going to join. I've also found out that the counties to the north, to the east, and to the south are also going through the same transition. What they did is they created these districts, and then in the same area they created something called the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service Area, which is another completely separate district from the actual police district. It's a very strange thing. So here's what Sheriff Winder says in a quote, and this is from in August of 2009. Says it's a quote, "It's important that people recognize the agency, and they will no longer say sheriff's office. It's anticipated they will say unified police department." He told that to a radio station, as if it's really important to just completely get rid of the sheriff, the office, the department that went along with the sheriff. Now, what's important about these districts, and you're going to find that your water, your sewer, your electric, your cable, your school districts, any kind of district, anytime you hear the word district or service area or any type of district, This is what we're talking about. And again, it's like every little individual function of government is being divided up and made into these types of districts. They're unconstitutional, unlawful, and any other word that you want to put on there. And they're, for the most part, they're what's called public-private partnerships, and they're United Nations treaties when it really boils down to, and you really start uncovering things. So this Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area is a district within a district. So it covers the unincorporated area of the county, which is about 250,000 people out of, I don't know, 1 million. I can't remember the total number of people here, but 250,000 people. And it says, the sole purpose of the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area is to provide funding for police services in the unincorporated areas of Salt Lake County. This is from their website. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area does not provide police service. Instead, it forwards revenues to the Unified Police Department, the UPD, which provides law enforcement services to the unincorporated county. The UPD is responsible for all police operations. And under leadership, here's the kicker. The Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area was created by unanimous vote of the Salt Lake County Council, and not the voting public. The council appointed Jim Bradley, Michael Jensen, and Mayor Peter Caroon, who's the county mayor, to serve as the service area trustees, again, a corporate term, and Councilman Bradley serves as the chair. Okay, so what we've got, what the county has done, is essentially created a city by creating this district. They call it now a city government versus a county government. So the county claims to have two different governments because they're now calling what used to be the entire county, they've split it up into unincorporated and incorporated. This is such a mess. It's such a bureaucracy that's being created. And what they've done is they've given themselves the right and the authority and the jurisdiction without any approval by the voting public whatsoever to create what's called a service fee. Now, anything the government does is a tax. You can't avoid it. But they've somehow created this bureaucratic language that allows them to charge a fee. So all these districts around me, my sewer district, my water district, my school district, they're all charging me a small fee. And if I don't pay that fee, in this case, the Salt Lake unincorporated area has to pay about $160 a year. My water district is about $20 a month. My sewer is about $20 a month. And these are sewers that were already built, and they just create this district on top of it, just to make money. It's ridiculous. So basically, you have to pay $174, if I'm not mistaken, as what's called the police protection fee. Now, here's the kicker. If you do not pay this fee as a homeowner or as a business owner in the unincorporated area, you will find suddenly that they put that money into collections, and it now gets attached to your property tax. So all of a sudden, that innocent-sounding fee becomes a property tax. So what happens when you don't pay your property tax? What happens when you decide that you're going to protest this totally unlawful, unvoted upon, essentially unapportioned, if you really get to it, fee or tax? Well, guess what? They're going to take your home. They are going to take your home if you do not pay. And if you're a business owner and the fee is more for business owners for that police protection fee, they are going to take your business license. All right? So that's what we're dealing with.
It's basically extortion.
It's extortion to the extreme, and each mayor of each city that's participating in this is getting the power over their own sheriff's department. So it's like having a gangland style mafia legally. That's really what it boils down to. So to understand what this will mean in the future and what is already happening, and it hasn't happened here yet, but I want you to listen to this story. This is out of the Huffington Post. I'm sure it was posted a lot of other places, but this story of all things will make this clear and will make you understand how government has changed and what the United Nations, these districts, these public-private partnerships have done, because it's made the fire and the police departments and all these other departments into for-profit corporations through districting. Okay, that's what a district is. It's a new enterprise government entity. So listen to this, and listen to this good, because anybody that's listening right now, this will be a reality in the United States more so than it is, you know, just with this one single story. The title of the story is Firefighters Watch as Home Burns, Gene Kranich's House Destroyed in Tennessee Over a $75 Fee. Okay? Hell of a title, if you ask me. Now, remember, I told you that we have a unified police department, meaning that our police department has been created now into the same kind of district. And here in, Obion County, Tennessee, they have the exact same thing. A unified fire department that is a service area district and no longer just a county entity. All right, so a smoldering rage may be all that remains after Gene Kranich's home burned to the ground last week in Obion County, Tennessee. Firefighters are usually the bold sort, but they came, they watched, and that's it. Kranich lives outside of the city limits, so he's in an unincorporated area, and he admits that he forgot to pay a $75 annual service fee that would have provided him with fire protection. Firefighters wouldn't lift a finger, much less the hoses that might have saved the house. The fire reportedly started in some barrels outside, and as the flames crept closer to the home, Kranich says he offered to pay whatever it would take to the firefighters. The plea fell on deaf ears, meaning they were ordered not to help this man because he didn't pay his fee. Hours later, the home was gone, and so were his three dogs and a cat. He says they could have been saved if they had just put water on it, but they didn't do it. The South Fulton firefighters did show up and managed to save a neighbor's field. The neighbor had paid the fee, that $75 fire protection fee, we'll call it. But they would provide no heroics for the Kranichs. A local news report shows them climbing back on their trucks, flames still dancing over what once was the family's home. You understand what I'm talking about, I hope, just with this story. Now take that to police. Let's say that you decide that you don't want to pay an extortion fee. You don't want to pay a police protection fee to have these private security people be your police, which is what they have in that unincorporated area. Well, what happens? Let's just take an example here. Let's say that your house is getting broken into, and you call the police, and they come out and they find out that you haven't paid your police fee. Well, guess what? They're gonna eat their donuts and drink their coffee, and they're gonna watch your home get broken into, and they're not gonna do a darn thing about it because you're not part of their service area because you haven't paid the fee. This is what we're talking about. What if your daughter's getting raped? What if all of these possibilities are happening? You're about to get murdered. The police are not there for the people anymore. The sheriff is not there for the people anymore in my county and obviously in this Tennessee county when we're talking about firefighters. We have changed from an ethical, you know, Mayberry type of situation into something that is a business. It is a profit-based business. And if you don't pay to be part of that, what used to be, you know, tax money that paid for it, this is going to happen to you. And this is why I am taking on the entire darn government in my county, and I'm planning on a recall of the sheriff, the mayor, and the county council and anyone else that's involved. This is going to be hopefully make national news. I can't imagine it not, and I see that it's happening elsewhere.
No, I would be surprised if it makes national news with the shoddy reporting that's going on.
That's the problem.
I mean, before I get off topic here, because I mean, I would like to say something about that, but. Just to finish up with what you were saying earlier, is the real shame of it is that, you know, without this fee aside, you've already paid for it through your property taxes. You've already paid for these services. You've already bought the fire trucks.
Yeah, you know? And that's the important part, because these people are still paying taxes. They're still paying property taxes. They're still paying sales tax. They're still paying that on top of the fee. What they've done is they've separated the county, again, into two different types of districts. And, you know, what's really hilarious is that the sheriff can say, well, I've never raised property taxes. I've never, the Unified Police Department has never done anything at all bad. Meanwhile, this other district, which is inside of the police district, is the one charging the fee. But see, that has nothing to do with the sheriff. So the sheriff can rerun on an election and say he never charged, you know, he saved people money. It's ridiculous. It's a bureaucracy within a bureaucracy. And more importantly, to what you just said, what this is really doing is it is going around the law that says that you cannot raise property taxes and you cannot raise sales taxes without a vote of the public. It's required. And so what they've done is they've set up the districts and they've assigned the power of charging a fee. And you see the game that they're playing. They're going around law with legal code and this third level of government, basically, these districts, and they're turning that fee into a tax if you don't pay it, by attaching it to your property tax. It's such a crime. It is such a crime. I can't even begin to, tell you. It's horrible.
Yeah. So you said this all relates to Agenda 21. Could you clarify that a little bit? I mean, I'm familiar with Agenda 21, but I'm not exactly sure how this fits into the Agenda 21 plan.
Sure. This is actually probably the worst part of it, because now we talked about the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, which is not a police service. All it does, the sole requirement of that, is to fund the Unified Police Department, right? Which, again, the sheriff can just completely say that he has nothing to do with it. It's really amazing. But the problem you see is, I'm going to pull up another website here. I'm going to type in nbsgov.com. Now, what NBS is a private corporation. It is not a government corporation, okay? It is located in California, all right? Now, again, the only people that are involved in and are running the Salt Lake Law Enforcement Service area, the funding apparatus of the Unified Police District, the other district, is the two county council members and the county mayor. That's it. That's all it encompasses. Everything else, from billing to collections to the letters that go out to people that are insisting that they pay the police protection fee. I mean, this company comes in, this private company located in California, comes into Utah and comes into whoever hires them to do all of this, to create this district, to canvass the area, to say, well, you know, the medium income is this, and these people are, you know, this religion and this type of people, this color, this creed. And we think that they won't mind paying, well, we'll just say $170 fee, right? So that's what this company does. And so we have a private corporation. This is called a public-private partnership, okay? Very important to understand. And anybody who wants to understand this can go to my blog. In fact, don't go to the blog. Just type in the sheriff who sold his county. The sheriff who sold his county. It's gone all over the place, fortunately. It's gone viral, I guess you'd say, and people are passing it on left and right. So that's very fortunate for me, because it kind of protects me in a way, and I'm scared of these guys, you know. But when I pull up, you see, when I go to the website and I pull up NBS, and I pull up their clients, here's what it says. It says, public agencies of every type and size. NBS, this non-governmental private corporation, has nothing to do with government, has provided services to more than 250 local government agencies. And this is one of hundreds of these types of companies located all throughout the United States. All right? So 250 local government agencies, including cities, towns, and municipalities, counties and parishes, special districts, which is what we have, education and school districts and joint authorities, which means two or more agencies. So that can be, you know, your train, your everything. Everything is included in that list. And then when I go even farther and see who some of these clients are, I can look at cities and towns, if I can get the website to work here. I can look at the cities and towns that it has listed as clients, and I see this in California, the city of Chula Vista, the city of Long Beach, huge town, the city of Los Angeles, the city of Sacramento, the capital of California, the city of San Diego. I can look, and I can see that it also has counties. So we have San Bernardino County, El Dorado County, Napa County, Salt Lake, Utah. There's us, the county. You know, I can also look and I can see school districts. So this company, private company, is a public-private partnership. Again, there's two videos on that that article I was talking about, the sheriff who sold his county. There's two videos on there from a brave woman named Joan Vian, who I believe passed away not too long ago, and she explains what a private partnership is, public-private partnership is. It is absolutely an Agenda 21 aspect because it's taking government functions and transferring them to public entities. Now, if you really want to understand what that means, what this private partnership, public-private partnership means, the best way for me to explain it, make you understand, just in kind of layman's terms, would be like this. Let's say that the president comes out and says, hey, the military, and this is not a far-fetched situation at all. This could very easily happen if it hasn't already. The military, you know, we can no longer afford to, you know, arm our soldiers and give them the proper protection and armor. And we really feel that we need to involve a private corporation in this. And guess what? Raytheon and Halliburton have stepped up to the plate and are going to donate, you know, billions of dollars into the special service fund for military, right? So we've just involved two private corporations in what's called a public-private partnership, the public government and the private corporation acting together in a way to partner and recreate government. That is what Agenda 21 basically is. So now what happens is just like this company out in California is doing all the billing and everything for my county now and you know, sending anybody that doesn't pay gets sent to the county treasurer. The county treasurer attaches a senior lien against the home, and if you don't pay it after a couple of years, they take your home for a $175 fee. Likewise, the military is basically handed over to this private corporation, or these two private corporations. So now the military is essentially being run by the private corporation, which is Halliburton and Raytheon, the weapons maker, and it is being supervised by a government. Just like my county, even though the mayor and the two county council members are supervising the Salt Lake Valley Law Enforcement Service area, everything that's happening within that is being done by a private corporation in California. So you see that this is, like I said, it's a third layer of government. It is a complete federalization or corporatization of each little aspect of government. And it's happening at such an accelerated rate right now that there's hardly anything left that hasn't been put in into this type of districting and public-private partnership. So basically what
you're saying is it's the privatization of all forms of government in the United States. This is the Agenda 21 plan. Correct?
It is the privatization hidden within a public-private partnership, essentially, because, again, government in the skeletal form still has the authority over everything, but of course the private corporations are the one running the show. So, I mean, you know, it'd be like, it'd be they're basically
left to run wild, is what you're saying.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And, of course, it's a very organized, well-orchestrated thing, but it's happening to every level of government. Like I said, my water district, my sewer district, my school district, we have a thing here called Utopia, which is a fiber optic cable laying company. And, of course, they're building the largest NSA center right here in Salt Lake County, NSA Spy Center. It's going to be massive, and it's going to be the largest in the world, I believe, right here in good old Salt Lake County. And that is because we have partnered with the federal government and are allowing that to happen. All these fiber optics, we don't have a choice. You know, these fiber optics are coming into our home. And it's of course for the betterment of our our entertainment and internet experience is the excuse. But really, what it boils down to is all of our stuff's going to these we're finding what do they call those centers, fusion centers that are being set up in three different locations now, which are data collection centers for the NSA. I mean, we are turning into a police state so fast, it's pathetic. I mean, we were joking the other day that they're going to rename the state tree as a pole with a camera on it and a sensor on it. You know, the state flower is going to be these orange barrels where they're doing all this construction. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous. We are in such a bad state here. I can't begin to tell you.
No, I hear you. It's getting worse all the time. And basically, once this plan goes into action, everything that you do on the internet, everything you watch through TV, every phone call you make is basically going to be hardwired through an NSA center where they can observe everything you do.
Absolutely. And it's not even they, you know, because when we say they, that would assume that there's a person actually listening. No, this is all computerized. It gets triggered by keywords. It's very, very, very frightening.
It's insane how much computerized everything is getting. It's going to be to the point where they don't even have police officers anymore. It's all going to be cameras, and you know, computers are going to be the ones hauling you off to jail at this
point.
Well,
I mean, I know you're not far off there if you think about it. Because what do? We follow what the stoplights say. We go to a computer, basically an ATM, to get our money. We go self-check ourselves out of the grocery store. We've basically fallen prey to a computerized society to where, you know, there's a point where I think, well, we don't even need police because we're self-policing. If someone does something, we turn each other in, you know? And we call in for our court appearances now. We're going to start voting on the internet, which is just, I mean, a whole other can of worms. We vote on machines. Everything is automated to the point where the machines have taken over. We just do what they say.
So. Right. Yeah, and I'm actually looking forward to the day that I get a traffic camera ticket and I call my accuser into the courtroom, and I want to see if that camera actually shows up.
Yeah, exactly.
So when we were talking last month, when we had you on the show, you were talking about your film, The Corporation Nation, and how, in fact, the government has hundreds of trillions of dollars in assets that are just stockpiled and put into various funds and stocks and other things. So with this... with this debt ceiling thing going on, which, you know, you would think would be all over the news, but it seems to not be. It seems to be a minor footnote in the history of man right now. But you just must be just swimming, like, hearing about this. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, the whole thing is utterly ridiculous. The amount of money that is swimming around there. Yeah, I mean, I'm just going to... I'm about to release this documentary. I keep saying that, but I'm just at the end. I'm going to make the whole announcement here coming up, I hope, on the Corbett Report but in the next week or so. But I'm going to pull up... this is something that's in the documentary, and I think... I think this will bring it home for you to understand, you know, I make the claim that, and it's a very easy claim. It's not easy, but it's a claim that you can prove if you pull up all these pension fund reports and other holdings reports within government. So what I've done is I've gone back into the New York State Common Retirement Fund, which is basically the pension fund for the state. And I had seen a movie that really, really impressed me, but it was missing the most important part. This movie was called Inside Job. Have you happened to see that? It was narrated by Matt Damon. It was kind of a mainstream movie.
No, I haven't seen it yet, but I certainly will.
You must watch that movie, but you must watch it with the knowledge that I'm about to share with you. And then you'll understand why everything has them, because it basically points out the key players that all of this stuff happened. It explains what they were doing, the securities and the derivatives and all that. But it never mentions the fact that government already owned all these banks. They owned AIG. They own everything. All these corporations are controlled by government. Government is the main shareholder. And that you know, any corporation that you can think of, that is the case. Now, to prove that, I pulled up the 2006 New York State Common Retirement Fund asset listing of March 31st, 2006. And we go to domestic and international stocks. And there's 66 pages of stocks with about, 30, 40 stocks on each page. So the challenge is to find a corporation that's not listed in this report that the New York Holdings list, the New York Pension System, doesn't have stock in. It's impossible. And so as I'm going through the list, I look for the key players in the 2007 and 2008, what they call the financial collapse, right? We're trained to think that there was a financial collapse and that all these banks failed and they continue to fail and, oh, the poor banks. Well, here's the truth. Here's what was really happening, okay? I'm pulling up I'm going to pull up some of these banks. So we recognize the name Bear Stearns, right? Very, very, very synonymous with the 2007 stuff that was happening back then. Well, guess what? New York Pension System, and this is just one of hundreds and hundreds of pension funds, and there's over 230,000 different governments in the United States, each with its own investments of this type. Bear Stearns, the New York Pension System had 530,000 shares of Bear Stearns at a market value of $73.5 million. Oh, well, wait a minute. What's going on here? let's look at some others. How about Countrywide Financial? One of the bailout receivers got merged into another company. 3.7 million shares at a market value of $138 million. How about Freddie Mac? Well, wait a minute. Freddie Mac? 2.9 million shares at a market value of $178 million. Dollars. And then, of course, there's the the sister to Freddie, Fannie Mae, at 4.3 million shares at a market value of $224 million. And I can go down this list, and I can see every single player. I see Lehman Brothers at a million shares and a market value of $153. I see Merrill Lynch, which got sucked into Bank of America, 4.3 million shares at a market value of $340 million. So I can find every single bank. I can look for Bank of America, right? I'm sure that's on here somewhere. Oh, there it is, Bank of America, 19.6 million shares at a market value in 2006 of $896,993,000. Are you starting to see that what happened in 2007 and 2008 was a massive government-owned corporation? Because if you own more than 50% of the stock, you own the corporation. You are the proxy shareholder vote that decides who the board of directors are going to be, and thus the board of directors decides who the president of the corporation is going to be, the puppet. So what I'm telling you is that, you know, Citibank's over $1 billion here. I see that too. What I'm telling you that every key player that was involved in that was already owned by government. So when Merrill Lynch got sucked into Bank of America, that was a very planned thing. That was a merger of two government-owned corporations played off to you as a failed company, as a too-big-to-fail company. So the government uses taxpayer money to, quote-unquote, bail out these too-big-to-fail corporations. But in reality, all that means is they're taking a bunch of taxpayer money and giving it to the corporations that they already own, right? So for the government to say that they don't have money, for the government to say that we are in terrible trouble while it owns every single piece of real estate, every single company, corporation, Fortune 500 corporation, real estate, foreign currency, it has hedging, you know, a hedge is sort of a bet against the dollar will rise or fall. Every single foreign currency out there is held by each pension fund, each government, okay? To say that they don't have money when in 2006 they had $900 million worth of Bank of America? I mean, come on. You know, nobody. How about Goldman Sachs? 1.7 million shares, right? Now, what's also important is that I tell you that they own everything. They also own the rating companies, the companies that gave these stocks, these securities, these derivatives, these triple A ratings. They're the same companies that give cities and municipalities the triple A ratings when they're issuing bonds. So here's Barclays PLC. It's a foreign corporation actually in London, I believe. 2.5 million shares at $29.8 million. And of course, since we're talking about the rating companies, we have to include Moody's. Everybody knows Moody's, which is also, I believe, Standard & Poor's, the ones giving these AAA ratings. 1 million shares at a market value of $71 million. Who owns these companies? It's government. And so the whole thing is a game. It's a charade. AIG, 10.9 million shares at a market value of $726 million. So, I mean, I can go on and on and on and list every single player in this whole thing. But I don't think I need to because...
No, you don't. In fact, you went through a good chunk of them, which I'm sure was just the tip of the iceberg in our last episode. And for anybody who wants to find out about that, it's, of course, available at the iLibertarian website, thekingformayor.com or iLibertarian.thekingformayor.com, whichever you prefer. It's also up on our Facebook page and on our TalkShoe site. Now, this all came about your discovery of this through. Correct me if I'm wrong on this. What you said on the last show is your mentor Walter Burian, the biggest game in town, came out with the details on the comprehensive report, and. I understand that he had quite a bit of backlash from that you were saying on the last show, that he was harassed and threatened, and this phenomenon doesn't seem to be limited to, you know, anything as huge as the comprehensive report. It seems that anytime anybody has any information to bring forth about the government and what's really going on, or steps on the toes of one of these major corporations, that we have these, I'm not even sure what to call them. I just call them black ops groups, because we really don't know who they are or who they work for, or you know, where their funding comes from, what their purpose is. But more and more, it seems that that just regular people who are trying to do what's right in the world seem to be coming under attack. What is your feelings on this? I mean, what is there anything that we can do about this? Am I crazy? Am I making this up?
Well, No, I'm quite honestly, I'm scared. I mean, I've got Walter, you know, I helped him do that documentary. He's been exposing this for 20, 25 years now, to be honest. He was one of the first tenants in the World Trade Center, actually, commodities trading advisor, who just happened to come across this. And, you know, he started exposing it, and then because of that, he got his kids kidnapped, his dog shot. He's been shot at a couple times. He's seen people killed in front of him in prison as a warning. I mean, he's had some terrible things happen to him, and he's one of the strongest men I've ever known. And, you know, there's another gentleman who Walter was almost a mentor. His name was Gerald Klatt, and he was in the military, and he was uncovering this stuff. And his website is Kafirman, CAFRMAN.com. And he started going through these things. Next thing you know, he's dead. You see, Walter made a name for himself, and that's what I'm trying to do. Is you know, I still haven't made a cent off doing this. This is not about money. This is about saving our, you know, our
country,
civilization. This is the blatant takeover of everything, basically. So, you know, Walter made a name for himself by being the consummate radio show guest. He's very sought after. So sought after that people will call, like George Nouri wouldn't have him on his show for obvious reasons, and enough people finally called that he finally broke down, or his owners broke down and had him on the show. And when Walter started getting a little too technical and revealing a little too much, they cut him off. And Walter never said, sorry, we're going to cut you off or anything. They just hung up on him and suddenly had a new guest. So, I mean, yeah, this stuff is the CAFR stuff. It's the Comprehensive Annual Financial Report. It's the holy grail. It's the motherlode of discovery of information. And once you see it, once you really grasp how it works and what these governments have, you will be shocked. And I'm not saying it's easy, because these are financial reports to the extreme. But what I am telling you is that any government entity that you can think of, all the 230,000 governments in the United States, including the Post Office, the Department of Defense, anything, has a CAFR. They might call them something else. They might call them financial statements. They might call them annual reports or comprehensive annual financial reports. But you're going to have something, and let's not forget the Federal Reserve. And this is one of my pet peeves with Mr. Ron Paul, is that he knows full well, because Walter's approached him about posting, you know, his state, his Texas comprehensive annual financial report on his website. He will not do it, and his reason, because he has a family and a political career. That's the reason. He cannot expose this, because he will lose his he will lose either his family or his political career. It's simple as that. When people do things like this, they suddenly get caught with a hooker, or they end up dead. And that's the God honest truth.
And that's the thing that troubles me, because we all have a family. None of us were born in test tubes, and it just seems that you know, that this is always going to be there as a piece of bait or a stick to wave at us. And, I mean, really, what is it that we can do about it? I mean, like you said, your friend got his name real big, but he's in jail now. Is that correct?
Walter is not in jail, actually. The other guy is dead, which was a very suspicious death. And Walter is basically living out in the desert alone with some dogs. You know, one of the common tactics is that the whatever the power that be is will hire a woman, a beautiful woman, to come in and you know, swoon you, and they say, man, if you can go get married and have a child with this guy, you're going to be set for life. So, you know, the woman comes in, has a child or two, and then splits with the child. And they, of course, give her, grant her the the right to the child, despite the fact that, you know, she might very well be a crack whore. You know, it doesn't matter, because the point was to take something that you have. Now, with me, I've learned from this and from watching Walter and from talking to him and watching other people and how, you know, these people are, you have something to lose. You're never going to be in a position to really affect change. And so I gave up my job, my $80,000 a year job as a sound editor, a sound designer in Hollywood. I gave it up because I knew that I had some purpose, something else to do. And it wasn't making propaganda films. And what I figured out, when I figured this out and when I met Walter and started understanding this whole thing, and I've still got miles to go, don't get me wrong. But everything is so clear since I've understood the Kaffir thing. But, you know, I don't have anything to lose, and that's what makes me unique. The only thing I can get taken away from me right now is my life or my freedom, but there is nothing else that I can lose, and I've purposely put myself in this place. It probably sounds crazy to most people, and it's kind of an unsung, an unsung thing, but it's so absolutely necessary for certain people in this world to do what I'm doing. And, you know, I mean, this might sound corny, whatever, but I can't imagine doing anything else at this point. This is absolutely what I was put on this earth to do. And if I die or something happens to me, so be it. As long as I stick it to these people for completely it's horrible.
It certainly is. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to use this opportunity to refresh our drinks and other things. And when we come back, we're going to open up the studio lines. If you have questions for Clint Richardson or myself, or a comment you wish to make, feel free to do so. If you're listening in on your phone and you wish to speak, just press £1 to bring up the flag for me to let you into the conversation. And also, when we come back, we'll be talking about the free man movement and common law. So we'll be right back with Clint Richardson. You're listening to iLibertarian, Wednesday nights, midnight on the East Coast, 9 p.m. on the West, on the Talk Shoe Radio Network. Give us a call down at the studio, area code 724-444-7444, and the call ID number is 95724 #. I Libertarian, we're listening to you.
1, 2, 3, 4. 1, 2.
Let me tell you how it will be. There's 1 for you, 19 for me. I'm the tax man. Yeah, I'm the tax man. Should 5% appear too small? Be thankful I don't take it all. 'Cause I'm the tax man. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm the tax man. Don't ask
Okay, folks, we are back, and again, our guest is Clint Richardson. He is from We Are Change, Utah. He is also the filmmaker behind the Corporation Nation, and he's also running for president. He's got a website called ClintForP.com, where you can find all sorts of things about his philosophy. You back with us there, Clint?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So, Well, I want to talk about this free man movement that seems to be sweeping the nation right now, and it's sad to hear that our sheriffs are disappearing, because that is really one of our lines of defense on this thing. But I was recently encouraged to rewatch the movie The Matrix, and I've watched it about four times now. The original movie, not the sequels, which I'm not exactly sure what was going on with those. But the original movie is a beautiful metaphor for the legal system in all sorts of ways. You've got this character, Neo, who's also got his real-world name, Thomas A. Anderson. And it's really interesting how the agents of the Matrix always refer to him as Mr. Anderson, and not by his Neo name. In fact, there's even a scene in the beginning of the movie where they sit him down and explain to him that he just flat out explain to him that you are a man that is living two lives. You seem to be two people. You know, there's Mr. Anderson, our model citizen, and then there's this other person, Neo. And one of them has a future, and one of them doesn't. Wah-ha-ha-ha-ha. And this is a great way to kind of understand this idea between our real identity and our, I guess you could call it a civil identity. This idea of that, or also what's called the straw man, where it breaks creates a corporate personhood, which you know, that allows the civil law to interact with you, and it even goes on further in the movie, in that when he finally breaks out of the Matrix and he's on the ship, there's two different types of people on the ship. There's the people who are, you know, who are from the system, who have the ports on the back of their neck, which allows them to interact with society, and this is very much like your corporate entity. And then you have the other people on the ship who call themselves free men, and they don't have the ports, and they can't interact with the Matrix, and the Matrix has no way of interacting with them. I just kind of wanted to bring that up as a real easy way to explain it to our viewers out there. But if you'd like to expand on that, I would love to hear what your thoughts.
Well, yeah, if you take out your birth certificate, you know, there's all kinds of little things you can look at that'll really surprise you. But if you take out your birth certificate, or in other words, your certified copy, because your original birth certificate is kept, you know, at the government offices in Washington, D.C., and you'll never get a copy, the original copy. But if you take your certified copy and you look at the bottom, it's generally on the bottom, say, left-hand side, sort of in small print, you'll see that your birth certificate is actually a banknote. It's actually a trust. And this is very interesting, and we can look at our checks, and we can take a magnifying glass to the dotted line where you sign your signature. And if you look really close, you see that line is not a line at all. It actually says authorized signature over and over again. And it looks like a little line, but it's actually a bunch of words all stuck together that say authorized signature. This is because these things are because you are not you. I mean, it's very much like you just said with the, you know, the ports. Yeah, you are sort of two people. One, you are a natural person born on the land. But in order to, as you say, interact with government and interact and in business and in commerce, you have your corporate structure. The word corporation, it basically comes from the Latin word corpus, which means to veil in artificial clothing or artificial personhood. So each one of us is pretty much walking around, each one of us that has a social security number and a birth certificate and all that, is walking around with a you know, what do you call it? I call it an artificial personhood, but it's a veil of clothing, essentially, and then everything we do when we're interacting in society is through that veil. So when I apply for a job, if I apply for a job, I have to give my social security number, I have to get a background check, I have to go through all the hoops and requests that job is going to, you know, require. And now they're talking about Real ID and also E-Verify, which is just a branch of Real ID, meaning that everybody that applies for a job must go through the E-Verify system, and if you don't, you just don't work. So it's not really you who are working. You're the one doing the work, but it's your corporate entity that is getting paid. And I think the easiest way to understand this really is, what do you think happens when someone goes bankrupt? Right? We're saying to the main corporate structure that our personal veil of corporatism, our incorporated entity that we call our straw man, essentially, is broke. We've borrowed too much money, and we cannot pay it. And so suddenly, we get to start over. We're all of a sudden back at zero. We get to keep some of our things, our car, maybe our house. Everything else goes, and we start over, and all of a sudden the credit card companies start sending us new offers. And you go, wait a minute, why is this happening? Well, basically what happened is you just reset your corporation. You haven't changed. Nothing about you, the person, has changed, the people. But your artificial person has declared this bankruptcy, and it starts over. The credit rating gets a little better. You start getting these offers. But these aren't coming to you, the person. The natural person, I should say, they're coming to your corporate entity. So, I mean, basically, so the easiest way to understand it is just like you said. You're everything you do in commerce and interaction in any business structure, any purchase, is your straw man. Everything else is you.
To kind of expand on this a little more, to get into this idea of the free man, down here in Florida, we're having a huge issue right now with Real ID, and quite a number of people are upset about it, and the government is doing very little about it, especially those of us who are in the libertarian movement. And so what we've had to taken to is because we don't want to involve ourselves consent to this Real ID system is, you know, basically we have to at this point say, okay, and we're turning in our licenses to the state when they come up for renewal and say, okay, well, I'm just not going to have a driver's license because I don't want to forfeit my Fourth Amendment rights. I don't want to have my image locked into your system. I don't want all my personal records being kept in a database. So basically now I am going to operate as a free man. I'm not going to drive my car anymore. I'm going to travel in my vessel. If you have a problem with this, then you can go ahead and try to arrest me, but we're going to bring this up in court and expose the reason as to why we're having this issue. And so I know that I read on your blog there, realityblogger.wordpress.com, and that's with 1G, realityblogger.wordpress.com, that you had a friend who is also in a similar situation. I was hoping you could tell us a little more about that.
Yeah, you're talking about Joe?
Yeah, I'm talking about Joe. That's
Joe's
a great
he's
story,
a really,
by the way.
Really interesting cat. He, you know, he's been driving without a license plate, without insurance, without a driver's license, and without registration for quite some time, years, tens of, well, actually, I think it's been about 8 years now that I think about it. But he's a handicapped individual. I think it's multiple sclerosis, if I'm not mistaken, so, which actually gives him a great advantage because, you know, it's he's got those laws on his side and he's got all these things he can do. But, you know, basically he's got a couple cars, and on his car he has his own license plate. He doesn't call it a license plate because it's not a legal thing. It says exempt, basically. It has his phone number on there. It has a couple things, other things on there. And it's basically just to say, this is my property. It is not your property. And basically how a car works, very similar to what we're talking about with the birth certificate. When a car is any kind of automobile or RV or boat, when it is manufactured, it is manufactured with the it's called the manufacturer's statement of origin, the MSO, and that is the original title of ownership. And that, again, just like your birth certificate, gets sent to an office in the state, and then on to Washington. And what you receive in the mail is a certified copy, which gives you permission to drive the state's property. When you register your car, you are giving ownership of your car, and this applies to your home as well. When you seek title and deed for your home, you are registering your home, essentially, with the state, and then you are allowed to live in the state's property. It's nice to think that you own your home, but one of the tenets of Agenda 21 and the Communist Manifesto, in fact, are to abolish property rights. And that is essentially what's happened. No one in this country actually owns the property that they live on. You can say it, you can dream about it, you can fight me tooth and nail, but as soon as you don't pay property tax, the government takes your home. Plain and simple. You do not own your property. That's the God honest truth. And if you did, then, you know, and if you believe you do, I always say, look, if you believe you own your property, don't pay your property tax. You know, it's make a stand and see what happens. You know, they're going to come in, they're going to take your home. It's simple as that, because you do not own it. They cut off on a sidetrack.
Well, I was talking about how to kind of engage in this, or a better question would be, what is going on with our court systems here that they, where we don't seem to be operating on a common law anymore, and how do we kind of combat this system,
yeah,
which is really about what your friend's story was about.
Yeah, I mean, basically, yeah. It's amazing. I went with him to just the traffic court, to what they call the Justice Center, which is ridiculous. And he specifically wanted me to come to this one court, a judge named Judge Stoney, who basically looked like an evil an evil Dick Cheney, I guess. But he would send me
That's
up
pretty
there.
Evil.
Yeah, really. And I said an evil one. But he would stand up there with his mallet, and he would tell people, "You owe me $950." That's how he would conduct his court. Like, he didn't even make a pretense of the fact that it was a lawful court. No, he was not there as a peaceful keeper of the peace and a keeper of justice. He was there in a profit situation. In a court of equity, I believe is the term, the correct term. And unless you challenge that authority, what Joe did was he sat in the audience part of the court, watching all these people, you know, admit to guilt, and just ridiculous how these courts are run. And Joe sat there, and they finally called his name. And the judge knew, because he had sent letters to the judge saying, if you violate my rights, I'm going to sue you. I'm going to take your bond. And what happens is the judge, he will get up and he will leave the room and immediately come back in. And when you see a judge do that, they are actually, the reason they're doing that is because they're changing jurisdiction in the court. You cannot change jurisdiction in a court, apparently, if you're still within the court. You have to come back and enter the court. And so Joe stands up and he says, I don't understand anything that's happening. I don't understand everything the judge said. He said, I just don't understand. He acted kind of old and decrepit, which he's not. And by saying that, he was telling the judge that he did not stand under the authority of that court. He never crossed the bar. He never went into the court. He sat there and he made a special appearance challenging the authority of the court. And by saying that I don't understand to everything the judge said, he was simply saying the term is actually stand under. If you understand or stand under something, you agree to be a part of that and be under its authority. So Joe was just basically saying, hey, I don't agree with this. You do not have authority over me. I have authority over you. I do not understand. And to understand, to comprehend these types of words and what they really mean is what it takes to do what Joe is doing. Joe gets ticketed all the time, he gets pulled over and harassed, but he's such a brave individual, and he will not register his car, he will not get a driver's license, he will not get insured, and he will not cooperate. He will not consent to this legal fictional code that is not lawful, and that's basically what we're talking about. He is a lawful sovereign that is trying to live and do business in a world that requires all of these things,
which is an extremely difficult thing indeed. When I first heard about this, I was about 6 or 7 years ago, and I was at a bar, and there was an older gentleman there, and he said, I don't have an ID. And I'm like, well, how did you get into the bar? How are you drinking? And he's like, I don't need an ID. I'm a sovereign citizen. And I'm like, okay, you piqued my interest, you know? And he's like, yeah, I just signed a waiver saying that I don't need an ID and that I attest that I'm of age. And he went on and on and on and about just like how difficult it was. And I finally asked him, I'm like, well, how does one become a sovereign citizen? And he's like, well, that's for you to find out. And then he just walked away.
Well, and it's true. You know, you should not even attempt it. You should not even attempt it without a minimum like 2 years of studying all the laws and everything you're going to need to go into court. If you don't know what a special appearance is, you're dead. Because if you're making a general appearance, you're accepting the authority of the court. But if you make a special appearance, you know, and you demand a jury trial or you demand a court of record, there's so many things to learn about this. I don't know. I want to do it and I want to walk that walk, but in my current situation, I don't feel like I can quite yet. I think eventually I will. One of the things, one of the funny things that I figured out here recently, I was talking to a friend of mine, and we decided that we would let Joe, because he's a brave guy. He'll do anything if he thinks it'll work. And so we decided that, as I was growing up, one of the questions on the DMV test when we would take the test for our driver's license was, who has the right of way? And it was always farm equipment. And we're thinking, farm equipment? Why does farm equipment have a right of way? Well, it turns out some of the farmers around here have fields that have been eminent domain and a road or a train built between. But the farmer still has the right of way in all cases to drive his farming equipment on the roads. And so we suggested and I'm thinking about doing the same thing, but we suggested to Joe to get a riding lawnmower or something that can be considered farm equipment, and just to use that instead of driving a car, because there's no age restriction, there's no license required, there's no legalities revolving around it, so you could technically drive a piece of farm equipment anywhere, and have the right of way is basically what we're betting.
I think I'm just gonna take a hoe and just like duct tape it to the front of my car and be like, it's a tractor.
Exactly. You know, that's what I'm thinking. So, you know, you can use some of these old blue laws, you know, against the very people who try to, you know, destroy you. So.
No, that's a very interesting thing you brought up. And, you know, it sounds like your friend Joe here is a really interesting guy. Do you think he'd ever be interested in talking on a show like this?
I'm sure he would. He loves talking about it. And he's got, you know, he's got such a history on this stuff. He's been doing it for longer than most people that I know, and it's been a learning process. You know, he's learned through mistake, which is great for people like me who are trying to learn everything before I do it, you know. And so I'm sure he would. I can pass on his information to you, definitely.
That would be great. And if the time slot's too old for too late for him, be sure to let him know. I'd be happy to pre-record it earlier in the day for him if that works better for him.
Sure. Yeah, he's an eccentric old guy, a really really wonderful human being though.
That's my favorite kind. So you were saying you have to know what a special appearance is. I'm assuming you know what a special appearance is. Would you like to enlighten us?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically the difference between a special appearance and a general appearance is when you make a general appearance, it's what 99.999% of the people do. They go to court. You know, now when you go to court, you watch a video, it tells you that you have no constitutional rights, then you sign a paper, it says you don't have no constitutional rights, it says by signing this, you're giving up your constitutional rights to an attorney, to this, to that, you're being asked to fill in one of three choices, which is guilty, not guilty, or no contest. Now, when you enter into that kind of contract, you've just made a general. You've made your general appearance. You've admitted guilt, or you've admitted a non-guilt, or no contest, and you're automatically entered into the system. Whereas what Joe will do, again, is to challenge that jurisdiction. You don't actually have to say, "I'm making a special appearance," although I would if I was ever in this situation. And you are there to simply. Simply challenge the, well, you kind of mentioned it earlier, you know, the one of the most important things about this is that most what they call crimes are victimless, meaning, you know, the camera as an inanimate object that takes your picture is not a people. It's not someone that you can take to court and argue with, and therefore it is a victimless crime. So the concept of what a victimless crime is so important, because basically what God's law states, and it doesn't matter if you believe in God, it's not the point. What God's law says is that you shall do no harm to others, and you shall do no harm to their property, right? That is the basic, simple definition of what law is. And everything else is legality. It is code. It is all of these stupid rules that we're forced to live by, right? So when you go to court and you have no plaintiff, or the state is your plaintiff because you ran a stop sign, you ran a red light, you made an illegal U-turn, you walked your dog without a leash, you know, there's thousands of things that you can do. You smoked in the wrong place, you held up a sign in a non-free speech zone, you know, you can go on and on and on. There's no victim. There's no one. There's no plaintiff. There's no one that you can cross-examine and argue with, and no one has been hurt, and no property has been damaged that's owned by an individual person. So your plaintiff is the government itself, and that's a very you know, how do you win against that is basically the question. How do you win when the government is the plaintiff and the government is the one trying the case?
Right.
So
they're the judge and the jury,
yeah,
and the executioner.
Exactly. So in a victimless crime, you are challenging first of all, one of the ways to challenge it is just consent. You know, I don't consent. You know, because law is a consensual thing. Law is only good if it's consented to by the governed, and most law is not. Most law is, or most illegal code is consensual law. So the simple answer to most things is I don't consent. And you must verbally say that in all cases, because silence is considered consent. Now, I have an article on my blog that explains all this. It also explains, it's called Consent. It also explains that everything that comes out of the presidential presidential office, all the executive departments, including Homeland Security, TSA, the IRS, any of these things that are presidentially appointed, have no jurisdiction or authority over you, the individual people, as a people.
Unless, of course, you give them consent.
Right, but if you do not consent, and you verbally do not consent, I was talking to a friend who works for the TSA, and he said, yeah, I have no authority whatsoever. I am a representative of the federal government. The only people with authority in that airport are the local police. So if I have a problem, I can't touch you. I can't do anything to you. I have to call the local police. The problem is those local police don't have any authority over you either. You're not doing anything wrong. If you say, I don't want to be searched and I don't want to go through the scanner, I don't consent to this unlawful search, you know, you haven't done anything wrong. The whole thing is a scam. So,
right.
TSA,
which is why they teach people to say opt out instead of I do not consent.
Yeah, absolutely, because opt out, it doesn't really mean anything, and they can then put you through the rigmarole of all the stuff they do. And it's a very purposeful thing to create this kind of prison state in our minds. But consent, probably of anything that you learn in law, consent is the most important word you will ever learn. And by making a special appearance instead of that general appearance, a special appearance is something you make before you make a general appearance. A special appearance is simply, you are simply there to challenge the authority and jurisdiction of the court. And that's all you're doing. You're not crossing the bar into the court. You're not making any contracts. And again, this takes years of, and I'm not claiming I'm an expert. I just understand the concept. You're challenging the fact that the judge is acting. The judge, basically what the judge is an attorney in a black robe. He is not a judge. We haven't had judges in hundreds of years. These guys are acting as kind of arbiters. They're not real judges. And we also find that judges or courts are actually private corporations. The ones in L.A., at least, are owned by the judges themselves and are leased to the county. The county pays them like millions of dollars to use the court, and it's a scam. They create dummy accounts. They write dummy checks on them. You call the IRS about them, and they say, oh, we don't know about that. Sorry. No help here. So, I mean, we're talking about, a almost like a public-private partnership where the court is a private corporation being used as a court by government and run by the judge. The judge gets kickbacks. You know, if he puts you in jail or puts you on probation, he's getting money for that. He's assigning you a CUSIP number, a CUSIP, you can check that out, and essentially trading you on the open market as a commodity, as cheap labor. So.
Right. No, yeah, it's definitely a horrible system. So how do you think we besides, of course, challenging these laws on a case-by-case, basis, is there anything else that perhaps we can do as people of this country to kind of restore the order of law and bring back this idea of, or even bring back common law courts and common law judges with a jury authority to bring up these actual common law issues of property rights and other things.
I think it takes a huge learning process, and if you're willing to learn, you can do it. I hate to say it, but I mean that, like I said, the education system is so purposefully dumbed down that you know, it's a pretty tough it's a pretty tough road with just a high school education, even with a college education, to even, you know, understand the concept of law. I mean, just to give you an example, I mean, I talk to bankers and investment advisors and investment bankers who know nothing about institutional banking. Institutional funds are government funds. They have no idea that Microsoft is 83% owned by government. They have no clue. If they did have a clue, they'd be working for government. So likewise,
right? They're just little cogs in the machine.
Yeah, yeah. A good example is an attorney. Attorneys, you know, an attorney does not know law. An attorney's job is not to know law. An attorney's job is not to represent you either. In fact, when you get an attorney, you are admitting to the court through contract. You are admitting to the court that you are not sane or able to stand trial for yourself, and therefore you need the court's representation. Now, the attorney is there to simply make sure that the court does not screw up. In other words, he's ensuring the continuity of the court, because if the court screws up and has to pay you money, then it hurts the profit base of the court. And you have to learn how to defend yourself. If you want to bring law into the court, you have to present that law yourself. So anything that you want to be considered in court of law, you must bring that case file, that case law, that common law into the court. Otherwise, a judge does not have to, if a judge knows that you are innocent, this is the whole point. Because remember, a judge is just an attorney. If a judge knows that you are innocent because he knows of a law or a legality that has not been introduced into his court, he will not bring that law into the court unless you do it for him. Okay, so you are guilty until you prove yourself innocent by using other law. And even then, that judge can ignore it. There's been a lot of cases where people have tried to bring up the Constitution, and the judge will specifically say, you are not the people in that Constitution that Constitution was talking about. That Constitution, when it says we the people, later on in the Constitution, it says who the people are. It says the people are the representatives here today in this, signing this bill. The people were simply the founding fathers. We are not the people. That's not how the Constitution worked. Because if the Constitution worked that way, it would be a contract. And I certainly didn't sign that contract when I was born. I've just been thrown into it. And as long as I consent to all of these things that are supposedly constitutionally based, the Constitution, you know, kind of works. But it is not law.
Well, if that's true, then our whole government is illegitimate at this point, then.
Your whole government has been illegitimate since, technically since Lincoln. But if you really want to understand at the point at which everything changed, if you look up a gentleman named Eugene Schroeder and his research team a few years back, they did a beautiful work, and it's been reposted on the internet, called The War Powers Act. And if you get that and you read through that 50 or 60 page document, you will understand what happened to this country and why it became a corporation. Why it's no longer there. I mean, all you have to do is look around and see that nothing in this country is constitutional. You point to a law that's being passed right now that is in any way constitutional. Anyway,
there is one.
All right, so I mean, that alone should tell you that we're not run under a constitution. And truly, if you read the Constitution, which I challenge everyone to go read it. And really actually read it. Everybody quotes from it, but no one really reads it. You'll see that the Constitution takes away your rights way more than it gives you anything. There's all these clauses in there. The Fifth Amendment is the takings clause, which is the eminent domain. It says that your life, your liberty, and your property can be taken away with due process of law and with just compensation. That's the Fifth Amendment. Do you want to use that as a defense in court?
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, I mean, if you read the thing, I'll give you another really good example of what I'm talking about here, that nobody seems to read this thing, and that is the 13th Amendment. Let's talk about the 13th Amendment. I wrote an article called Is Slavery Legal in America? Right? So here's the 13th Amendment. Okay, it says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude. Okay, sounds good so far.
Right.
Except as a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. Oh, wait a minute. Shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. So what does this say? It says slavery and involuntary servitude shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction, and the United States is the corporation, it is a punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted. So you understand that what the 13th Amendment did was it took away the right, whatever your opinion of slavery is, doesn't really matter. It took away the right of the people to own slaves and gave it exclusively to the government. Go read the 13th Amendment. It's a very short, little, three-sentence thing. When you go and you put these pieces together, you will see that the Constitution is not at all in any way what you think it is. It's actually quite frightening.
No, it's not, and it seems that the further you go down the amendment list, the worse it gets. It just gets worse and worse. Perhaps it's time that the people decide to actually start amending this thing and fixing some of these clerical errors.
And they're not errors. That's the thing. You know, they're very purposeful. And oh boy, if you took all these, I call them clauses. I'll give you another one. Here's the Fifth Amendment I was talking about. It says, nor shall any person be compelled in any criminal case to be a witness against himself, nor be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor shall private property be taken for public use without just compensation. So what does this say? It says your life, your liberty, and your property can be taken away with due process of law, and your private property can be taken for public use with just compensation. All you have to do is change the words around a little, and you see that this is no right. This gives the right to take your property, your life, and your liberty to the government with due process of law. That's the Fifth Amendment, my friends. This is called the Takings Clause, actually, and it's what eminent domain is based on. It's why the government can take your home anytime it wants to. So,
yeah.
Very frightening stuff. And I highly recommend people go read the one on habeas corpus. It says habeas corpus can be taken away through due process of law when the public requires it, when the government requires it. And guess what? There is no habeas corpus now. It's gone. So I would call for a constitutional convention, a constitutional Congress, I think it's called. I think there's a difference. Basically, to take these clauses out. You can keep the Constitution basically the same and just take those types of things out. Take the except with due process of law out, and you've got a beautiful thing. You know, it would say there's no slavery allowed in America. And that would take the prison system and tear it apart.
Yeah, which I think is definitely something we need to do, but that is, I think, a whole nother topic for a whole nother night as we're getting close to the end of the show. We've had somebody who's been listening on their phone, goes by We the People 33. I just wanted to see if they had anything that they wanted to say before we get to the end of the show here. Hello, We the People 33. You've been listening to the show on your phone. Is there anything you'd like to add to the conversation before we get to the end here?
No.
No? Okay, well, I'm glad you're listening and enjoying the show. Thanks for listening. So that kind of brings us to the end. I still haven't been able to ask you everything I want to ask you, Clint. Hopefully, in the future we'll be able to get you back on the show again to dive into some of these topics a little bit more. Is there anything else that you'd like to put out there before we get to the end of the show?
I'm coming out with part two of this the Corporation Nation. It's going to be called The Great Pension Fund Hoax, and it'll be up here in the next week or two. And I'll be making the announcement for actually running for president, and I am dead serious about that. And if anybody wants to check out the reasons why I'm doing that, it's really an idea whose time has come. Basically, again, it's Clint4P, the number 4, the letter P.com. If you read just the front page, you'll see that all I'm trying to do is organize all of these people, all these parties, from Ron Paul to Cynthia McKinney to Chuck Baldwin to, you know, anybody else you can think of, into one party. And it's not really a party. It's actually a republic. In other words, every party and every person and every individual, whether it's one person or a group, needs representation in a republic form of government, which is what we're supposed to have. And so all I'm trying to do is run as a group of parties so that all people can have representation. Like I said, it's an idea whose time has come. We can no longer be Republicans and Democrats because there's no difference between the two parties. And I think most people are starting to realize that, the people at the top of the parties are no different. Whereas the individual people might be different, the politicians are not different because they're attorneys.
There's some great people listed on that site, and I recommend that people go there and check it out and check out those folks, and a lot of them have videos and articles that you can read that are really great. We the People 33 has put on their Request to Talk bubble on, so let's see if they have something to say. Hello, We the People 33, your talk bubble came on. Is there something you wanted to say?
That I'm really enjoying what I'm hearing, and you can email me at elvira52@bellsouth.net. I have all different parties and different humanitarian groups and stuff that I deal with, and I promote people. As a matter of fact, I just sent out an email because I have, every party you can think of, Black Republicans, this, that, so on and so forth. And they sent out a Condoleezza Rice email to this week about her being president. So I would like to send yours out as well.
Well, what's your email again?
Elvira52. BellSouth.net. I promote people.
All right. Well, I'll shoot you an email, and I appreciate it.
That was Elvira, as in like Elvira, Mistress of the Night, 52.
Yes.
And what was the...
52.
At 52 at what again?
ELVIRA52@BellSouth.net.
Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
Is it all right if I send you a link to my website as well?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, okay, wonderful.
You got to look at what you have to do, what's going to happen. I'm constantly emailing and promoting, so you'll be getting a lot of emails from me because I'm in human rights, I'm in all types of Cynthia McKinney groups. Everybody
just spoke up. Well, I'll tell you, I love me some Cynthia McKinney. I'll tell you, she's awesome.
I have her group. I have them. You name it, I got it.
All right.
Awesome. Well, yeah, I certainly look forward to those emails. Why don't you get my email address? Thank you for sharing that with us.
that I would like to promote you because I really like what I'm hearing.
Well, I appreciate it. I'll shoot you an email here in a couple minutes.
Okay, and then tomorrow, yeah. Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, and thank you for listening in. Hopefully, we'll get you again.
Take care.
And so, folks, check out Clint 4 as in the number 4, P as in Peter, or President, I guess, in this case, .com. You can also check out my political insight at the King 4 Mayor, as in the number 4, the King 4 Mayor.com. We've got a little campaign run going now, Clint. Do you consider yourself a presidential hopeful or a presidential unhopeful?
Well, I'm running an un-campaign. I'm an unincorporated individual, so I do not have to follow campaign anything laws. I'm running mostly to educate people on, you know, it's ironic that really what I'm doing is running on the fact that I can't win. Because the voting machines are not only rigged, 80% of people vote on Diebold machines, but it turns out that government owns Diebold. So they decide everything that happens in Diebold. It's really ironic that I can't win because the voting thing is fixed. I mean, it's simple as that. And I'm trying to educate people on that.
And not only that, but it's only a popular vote anyway. And as we've seen in the past, that doesn't really matter.
Well, if I can turn people on to Cynthia McKinney and to Chuck Baldwin and to anything other than the Republican and Democrat parties and make people realize that this whole misnomer that a third party can never, win or never affect any kind of change, that's the most horrible myth that's been perpetrated on people, I think, in the political process, so...
Well, somebody, I don't know who was saying that. What it really is, it's the war of popular opinion. Everything else doesn't matter.
Yep.
It's popular opinion in the end that rules out at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's I call it the court of popular opinion. You know,
that's
absolutely
that's
what it's all about.
Excellent way to phrase it. Well, again, Clint, thank you for coming on. I hopefully we'll have you on again in the future. It's been excellent talking with you. And remember, folks, iLibertarian is going to be on Wednesday nights at midnight until July 14th, when we'll be moving to Thursday nights at 11 p.m., where we'll be simulcasted on livefree.fm, as well as our regular show on TalkShoe. And next week, our guest is going to be Martin Truther, who is the engineer behind the Red Pill Guide, and he is going to take us down the rabbit hole. Again, our guest this evening has been Clint Richardson, thecorporationnation.com, and he is going to come out with part two of his documentary very soon, so I recommend you guys all go to the website and check it out. This has been iLibertarian for June 15th on the TalkShoe Radio Network.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Unmuted.